Welcome to the Enlit Africa podcast. During our digital event, which took place between the 8th and the 10th of June, we spoke with Kadri Nasip, Executive Director for Energy and Climate Change from the City of Cape Town. We wanted to understand just how the city was addressing issues around climate change and energy security. What follows is the full recording of the interview with Kadri Nasip.
Kadri, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you, Claire. Always grateful for the opportunity to have these kind of discussions with you.
The city has had some plans with regards to prosumers, peer-to-peer trading, and how to deal with the increased number of distributed energy resources, which I imagine you're starting to see on the grid. And I was wondering if you could possibly just talk us through some of those plans.
Well, thanks, Claire. I think first off, I think one must acknowledge, you know, some of the challenges that are being faced at local government level, and in particular, as we've seen even now with the recent spate of load shedding that's upon us again, that the scourge of load shedding is likely to be with us for the next 3 to 5 years, perhaps longer. The expectation certainly from the city is that one needs to become more resilient. And of course, resilience underpins a lot of the strategies that are developed within the city in looking at the future operation of that city. So when we talk resilience within the energy space, we're talking about energy security of supply. And certainly given, I think, the plight of Eskom, there has to be acknowledgement that we need to be more independent of Eskom. Not completely, of course, we're acknowledging the role that Eskom will continue to play in the future. However, certainly in the interest of our customers, we need to be considering the alternatives. At the same time, we're also acknowledging that the international energy space is evolving rapidly. And of course, as prosumerism develops around the world, so we're finding that it's becoming more necessary. Our customers are asking for this. And we, of course, responding as best as we can. And there's been quite some there's been limited success so far. I would say very encouraging signs, always room for improvement, but certainly the indications are that small-scale embedded generation within the city has been successful and will continue to be so. We have well over 50 MVA connected already to the grid, and with those customers supplying excess capacity back into the grid. Along the way, we've actually just introduced a new incentive tariff, which is 25 cents over and above the existing feed-in tariff, just to incentivize new customers to come on board on the SSEG program. So that's one useful way, I think, in which the city is assisting consumers to become more independent in their own right. Of course, there's been a much publicized court case that was heard in May of last year. The outcome of that court case was, of course, a judgment that argued that we should be talking more to national government, which is a process that we have started, with the idea that Cape Town and other Munichs around the country are able to actually go out and procure their own power from IPPs, as well as potentially build their own capacity. And both those options, by the way, are of interest to the city of Cape Town. So on the one hand, we are very committed to a process that says that we will be procuring at least 300 megawatts of capacity from the open market. That power will probably only be seen on the grid within the next 3 to 4 years, unfortunately. At the same time, we're also committed to an embedded generation program that says projects below 10 megawatts that can be connected into our network will then be procured. And so that power, we're expecting IPPs to respond to an RFP that we'll be putting out within the next 2 months. So that's a very real short-term objective, is to put out an RFP to the market. And then to look at awarding preferred bidder status to those developers that meet the criteria and allow us at the end of the day, if you aggregate all of their projects, to deliver probably another 150 to 200 megawatts of power onto the network. And as I said, that's embedded in our network. That's their objective. So that's two very interesting developments, I think, that are surely going to transform the energy landscape. In parallel, we're now looking at the space around own generation. One of the opportunities for us might well be to construct more of our own generation in terms of solar plants. We're really at an advanced stage of development of Cape Town's first city-owned ground-mounted PV plant, which is will be about 10 megawatts capacity, and that will be located in Atlantis. And so the project is well underway in terms of development. However, we can also see the potential there to expand that into other publicly owned areas, as well as possibly in collaboration with the private sector to lease suitable land for ground-mounted PV. So that's starting to take shape. And yeah, ultimately, the objective might be to put a few more hundred megawatts of capacity onto the grid, and that would be ground-mounted PV around the city itself. So I think that's a good indication to you, Claire, of where we're going. Ultimately, I can see that we would have a power exchange operating, because as the market becomes more dynamic and the needs of our customers change and the availability of power changes and the type of power changes, we would definitely be able to operate, I would say, a viable power market within the city and the region.
So if I may ask, you've spoken about the fact that the city needs about 150 to 200 megawatts, so that's what you're hoping to put onto the local grid. You're talking about some of the existing generation that you are currently bringing onto the grid, and the fact that you are also looking at some of your own generation. Is that included in that 150 to 200 megawatts, or is that in addition to? And how much are you ultimately hoping that the city will be able to procure and add onto the local distribution grid? And what does that mean in terms of, the city's protection from load shedding?
Well, certainly, those are different contributions. So, for example, on the embedded generation program, the project's under 10 megawatts. And there we're looking specifically for, if you're to ring fence that, between 150 and 200 megawatts, for example. So that would be, in essence, a ring-fenced program. The own generation component, particularly, as I've mentioned, the 10-megawatt solar plant in Atlantis, that's city-owned. And so we'd be looking to also expand city-owned generation, which is over and above the contribution that will be made by IPPs onto our network. Bearing in mind that the other program would then talk to IPPs from around the country, and that would be, as I've mentioned, about 300 megawatts of capacity that would be added to the network. And that's over a period of time, of course, but it would be then wheeled through the ESCOM network. So there would be those cost elements to factor into pricing. But certainly we intend on opening up the market to those IPPs as well. In terms of load shedding, every stage of load shedding for us amounts to anything between 45 to 60 megawatts, depending on the time of day, of power that has to be reduced in terms of demand. So effectively, you're looking for that, let's say, 45 megawatts of power. So far, we've been quite successful in using Steenbras, the pump storage plant, to mitigate one stage. And we're very proud of that, and we keep trumpeting that all over the place. But it is an achievement in a sense, because it has assisted particularly the commercial sector to keep operating, in these difficult times. So for us, we would like to build on the success of Steenbras. And you can do that in a number of ways. I mean, we could, for example, look at large-scale utility storage that is being considered at present. We could look at load management strategies that aggregate the contribution from various sources, particularly even the old ripple control type systems that were in place to manage geyser loads. There are, of course, new advancements on the technology, but serving the same function of being able to dispatch the power when needed, so that you can avoid those costly hours where we are actually just charging geysers when we don't have to be, particularly during peak periods of the day. So all those contributions, I think, can and will contribute towards lessening the impact of load shedding. Own generation and the purchase of power will also contribute significantly towards that goal. So it's not inconceivable that within the next 5 years, we would have reduced our dependency quite significantly. I can't give you a number as yet, but that number, when it is produced, would form the basis of an energy policy that will, I think, guide the city in terms of the way in which the market unfolds.
Thanks very much. I mean, I think that these are obviously very exciting developments, and I'm very pleased to be able to, you know, discuss some of this with you, but also very pleased to be living in Cape Town and to have not had the same, I think, burden from load shedding that some of the other parts of the country have had. If I may, I would like to shift the conversation a little bit, but obviously still part of your portfolio, and that is climate change. Now, this has been a big part of the conversations we've been having during NLIT, and I wanted to find out, you and I have spoken previously about adaptation versus mitigation, and I wanted to, you know, find out what has the city got in mind and what are the plans that the city has when it comes to both mitigating and adapting to the realities of climate change. And also, if you could perhaps just give me like a bit of a framework in terms of the time that you're anticipating some of this happening.
Sure, thanks, Claire. I mean, when I talk climate change, I'm going to speak about both adaptation and mitigation and consider the fact that, you know, we see ourselves as responsible corporate citizens as the City of Cape Town. We subscribe fully to the Paris Accord. We subscribe fully to the nationally determined contributions and targets that are set by national government. So we see ourselves as a critical role player, and certainly the benefit ultimately must pass on to the consumer. How does that happen? Well, in the case of adaptation, it's quite critical that we look at resilience first and foremost, particularly the areas where we've been most vulnerable. So you've seen the recent drought as a good example of where Capetonians have been extremely vulnerable, but at the same time have demonstrated, I would say, world-leading capability in responding to the challenge. And it's only because consumers reduced consumption the way they did that we were able to actually avert the full impact of the drought. So that's part and parcel of the equation, is that it's a collaborative partnership between the city, the residences themselves, the residents, as well as the private sector, NGOs, and all related bodies. When you're talking about where adaptation is most needed, certainly one can consider the impact around coastal erosion, looking at the changing rainfall patterns that we've experienced around the change in duration, the change in seasonality, the impact on biodiversity within the region. Certainly when one considers indoor air quality and look at rising temperatures and the impact that has, certainly the emphasis must shift to how do we improve the quality of life for these people that are living in extreme poverty in particular. So we have a number of initiatives that are encapsulated in the Climate Action Plan, which is scheduled to be released shortly. It follows on the development of the climate change strategy for the City of Cape Town, which has recently been published. It really talks to both mitigation and adaptation, and the Climate Action Plan spells out the individual projects and details in respect of how we will be meeting the objectives of our strategy. One of the key goals of the strategy is to achieve net zero carbon status for the city by 2050, and that relates in particular to buildings at this stage. By 2030, the objective is to have all new buildings in the city being net zero carbon and all municipal buildings, so that's existing buildings as well, to be net zero carbon. So we're taking the lead in the sense that we believe it's quite possible to achieve net zero carbon status for all municipal buildings. And that's an objective that we'll be pursuing in the course of the next 9 years to get there. At the same time, we have objectives within the transport space to reduce emissions, to reduce the consumption of fossil fuels. And there are a number of exciting developments taking place in that space, which are still being worked out. But at the end of the day, I think you'll see a new wave of public transport within the city. That'll be in the course of the next decade. That'll certainly transform that particular landscape. And of course, transport contributes about 29% towards the emissions of the city. So it's the largest contributor in any event, and we need to manage that more effectively. Mitigation is, of course, where the big money will go. And that, of course, includes some of the generation options that I've spoken about earlier in this session. But also, if you consider the other opportunities that could exist, so we've spoken a little bit about public transport, but even within the confines of an EV program for the private sector and helping to enable that. So that's all part and parcel of where mitigation will feature. So a large energy efficiency component that we'll be targeting, as I've said, the municipalities, but also particularly looking at other sectors where we could make a contribution.
Kadri, sorry, speaking about EVs, have you seen an increase in the number of private electric vehicles on the road? And, you've obviously spoken about the possibility of a corporate program, but from a private citizen perspective, what do you anticipate the impact of electric vehicles to be? I mean, both on the grid, but also on the city's ability to manage or reduce emissions.
Certainly, there will be an impact, a measurable impact. I mean, it's questionable given the consumption, electrical consumption required to charge batteries, as to how much that would add in terms of the city's revenue as far as vehicle battery charging is concerned. So I think over and above any potential revenue implications, which might be limited in the beginning, I think the real objective is to get our motorists to switch modes, into electric vehicle and do that with confidence. And also for them to realize some value, and where the value could be derived is in preferential tariffs that could be made available to them to allow them to act also as prosumers in a sense, so that, you could have a program, a dynamic program involving charging, discharging of batteries at certain key times that suits the grid, and allow homeowners to get the benefit of discharging power from their batteries into the grid at peak hours of the day, and then bring that charge back over the off-peak periods of the night, for example. So if you do that dynamically, you start to see how the market does develop. Unfortunately, there are very limited opportunities available for electric vehicles within the country at the moment, and that's largely due to pricing. It's also due to the availability of options, and that's influenced by, import duties at present, which are unreasonably high and inexplicably so. We don't understand why there are limitations being posed at this stage. But certainly the opportunity will exist, I think, in the short term, once more and more of the motor manufacturers go electric, which is the case, you're going to experience more and more uptake as it goes along. We've installed two chargers ourselves, and those two chargers have been sponsored by UNIDO, and we're very, very grateful to the support that UNIDO does provide to Cape Town and to the country. And those two chargers are located in Bellville and Somerset West, and currently provide a free service to owners of electric vehicles who wish to charge in the area. So it's a start of a process, and over time, we'd obviously see ourselves playing a role together with the private sector in rolling out electric vehicles further.
Yeah, I've been eyeing that beautiful little BMW electric vehicle, but despite my trying to convince my husband that it's actually all about saving the planet, he's not biting. So I'll have to keep on trying.
I think there's also range anxiety issues, that come with that, and I think that's the big problem, is range anxiety for many people. Plus the replacement cost of batteries. So there are a number of interesting financing models that are available or being discussed that involve the leasing of the vehicles. And I think in the short term, at least, the leasing of vehicles is going to be the preferred route, because it means that, you don't have to worry about, 3-4 years down the line of replacing an entire battery system within your car, the entire set. It'll be replaced as part of the regular maintenance of that vehicle, so as part of the lease. So I think more and more we're going to find innovative mechanisms by which the public will have access to electric vehicles.
Well, I certainly look forward to that. I have been a big fan of electric vehicles for quite a while, and I'm looking forward to the day that I own one of my own. So you've obviously mentioned quite a number of plans that the city has in place or that are on the table, but I was wondering if you could perhaps just highlight what your priority projects are for the next 18 months, say.
Well, certainly top of the list has to be the Meta Generation program, getting that RFP out to the market in July. So that will be top of my list right now. We're also just commissioned a study with the CSIR to do what we call a city-level IRP, which is an integral part of any procurement plan. And that involves developing at a city level a view of what the capacity expansion requirements are. And that, of course, would be fed into the specifications and so on for the RFP. It also gives a good indication to the market of what the city is looking for as we go forward. Along with that would be feasibility studies that have to go to the Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy as part of their gazetted regulations. And then hopefully there will be a Section 34 determination that comes our way. That's keeping fingers crossed. Along the way, of course, one has to further develop the own generation capacity. So that means the Atlantis project will continue. It's small in size, but it's a huge step forward for the city. So we sit in anticipation that we will have that project commissioned fairly shortly. But also, I think very importantly, and something we haven't touched on yet, is the role that hydrogen will play in the energy economy in Cape Town and the country. So that's my number one personal priority. So let's put it that way. I personally believe that the time for hydrogen has arrived. I believe it is not just the energy carrier of the future. It is the obvious answer to a lot of the challenges we experience, particularly around reliability as well as storage, the availability of power during off-peak or peak periods in terms of dispatchability. All of that is resolved through hydrogen if we can cost-effectively produce hydrogen. So the focus for us now is on feasibility studies around the production of hydrogen in Cape Town. I've got one eye on utilization of the old Athlone power station, which was earlier earmarked for housing, subsequently been established that it's not suitable for housing. So the opportunity does exist to potentially refurbish the site as an industrial green park, with hydrogen production being the cornerstone of industrial activity on the site. So that's one of the key areas, you know, that's really exciting me at the moment. Another area that I'm also involved in to a degree, although it's led by the Transport Directorate, would be the introduction of alternative rail. And I think we have discussed this before, but I see ultralight rail as the game changer within the city that's going to enable communities that have been previously stranded, you know, in terms of economic opportunity, being able to reach destinations that talk to societal and economic needs and to transform the landscape in terms of how we develop and how we grow the city. So for me, this is going to be a major, major step forward. And I'm very excited that a number of, let's just say, potential partners have stepped up to say they would love to be a part of this, including province. Province have been very enthusiastic about the role that they can play. And then at the same time, we have potentially other destinations that could be linked up. And I don't want to go into too much detail because they haven't confirmed it. But in essence, there could be some very exciting developments within 18 months. And that's what I'm really looking forward to at this stage.
Well, we'll be sure to keep our eyes and ears open for any announcements from the city on all of these issues. I know that hydrogen has formed quite a big part of the discussions that we are having here at Inland Africa this year, and I imagine that that conversation is going to start gaining momentum as we increase the development of our own hydrogen economy and our own hydrogen capabilities. Kadri, if there was anything that you would like our listeners and our audience to take away with them, what would that be?
I think first and foremost, I think they need to appreciate that, you know, local government is, first of all, a very difficult environment to work in because it's heavily regulated and legislated. However, what is critical is, I would say, first and foremost, political will. And I think we're very pleased that within the confines of the city of Cape Town, we have very strong political champions that are supporting the migration of the city from a role which is largely dependent upon a single service provider to one which entirely opens up the market and creates economic opportunity at the same time. So we are very pleased to have that kind of support. I think what also I find encouraging and which we must share with consumers is that we do see an opportunity to partner with the private sector, a partnership with residential consumers directly in making this transition happen. It's not going to happen on its own. It's not going to happen with just the city driving it. it's a partnership. So a lot of the initiatives I've spoken about, in particular around adaptation, also around prosumerism, et cetera, relies on collaboration. And we as a city are entirely dependent upon that collaboration to make this a success. So I think with those few words, I think I've touched on most elements which I think are critical, but leaving the listeners and the viewers with the words that, you know, our new slogan in terms of climate change is let's act for a stronger Cape Town.
Well, I can't think of a better sentiment to end this conversation on. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. The word collaboration has come up a lot in the conversations. It was mentioned by Sabine from Siemens. It was mentioned during our keynote panel discussion. So I think that as we move forward into our new energy future, collaboration is going to be one of the key ways that we underpin that transition. Kadri Nasib, thank you so very much for joining us.
That's it from us for today, but be sure to listen to our next episode, in which we are going to be getting some insights in how to incorporate small-scale embedded generation into your network, and that will be brought to you by my colleague, Nomvuyo Tena. From me, Claire Volkveen, thank you for being with us, and stay tuned for more podcasts from Ennet Africa about the things that really matter to the energy industry in Africa.